Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
This is CBS Eye on the World, the New World Report with Professor Evan Ellis of the U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. Mexico, the U.S. neighbor in North America, an election next year, and the extremely popular and powerful Andre Manuel Lopez Obrador, affectionately known as AMLO, is speaking out in all directions, not the least because he means to be part of choosing his successor for the Morena Party, his party. But in the meantime, Mexican President AMLO called for an end to the, quote, irrational war in Ukraine, urging upcoming peace talks in the Middle East to include representation from both Ukraine and Russia. At the same time, AMLO is speaking out against the presumption that the cartels who run the drug business, the human trafficking business, the violence along the American border, this is the Sinaloa cartel and others, the president of Mexico is speaking out against the presumption about the cartel strength. Mexican President AMLO, writes Reuters, pushed back against estimates made this week about the strength of Mexican drug cartels by the top U.S. counter-narcotics officials. The president went on to say that they don't have good information. I mention that because the president is involved in the election process for next year, and some suppose that his strongest successor is the mayor of Mexico City, Ms. Sheinbaum, who is campaigning now very carefully for that post by being friendly and outgoing and very careful about her conduct in Mexico City. At the same time, AMLO making large statements about peace in Ukraine and pushing back against the U.S. estimate of cartel violence along the border is a popular and extremely charismatic figure. The criticism that's emerging in Mexico is that Sheinbaum is merely incredibly well qualified for the job. Professor, I don't know how to put this any other way. The deep irony here is what makes Sheinbaum so attractive to those of us who follow the news is said to be some sort of inhibition for the voters in Mexico. At the same time, we've already spoken of Senator Galvez, who is a buyer bootstraps from poverty, who is a rival for AMLO. So this gets up into the matter of confusing Mexican politics. Let's begin with the question of AMLO and peace in our time. Is he an advocate for armistice and peace negotiations in Ukraine, or is he not?
Thank you, John. Well, first of all, of course, AMLO compliments certainly a number of others in Latin America, especially Lula da Silva in Brazil, who seeking to posture their countries as international brokers or reasonable players despite Russia's egregious violations of human rights and conduct in Ukraine, have tried to say, okay, well, we're not going to put ourselves on one side or the other, and we're just going to call for everyone to get along. The AMLO comment apparently came out of what is in the next couple of days going to be a summit that is being hosted by the government of Saudi Arabia in Jeddah, which is seeking to bring together 30 countries to discuss and really try to get some international support around the Ukrainian position on peace, which centers on getting Russia out of the country and restoring Ukraine's territorial integrity before anything else. So Mexico, AMLO basically said, well, you know, we probably aren't going to come to that unless Russia's there, which in some ways undermines the whole point of the summit of building building consensus around Ukraine's position on this. But it emphasizes that AMLO, who really is not seen as taking really a strong position on foreign policy, is trying to position himself in a way that puts a little bit of space between where certainly the United States and Europe and others are on this issue, and more in the category of others who are seeking to position their countries as relevant actors, such as Brazil is in that regard.
And the question of peace in our time is something for larger bodies, but the question of peace at the border, or at least a diminution of violence, that's very much about these cartels. AMLO is objecting to the DEA and the other measures of Congress about the violence. I understand that's a debate he's right to enter into, but at the same time, my understanding is the cartels dominate the migration story. Is that correct, Professor? You don't get across the border unless you deal with the cartels.
No, that's right, John. And basically, what's happened is it really started really more than two decades ago with the increasingly powerful cartel role with the decline of some of the internationally oriented Colombian cocaine moving cartels and the rise of the Mexican cartels in moving that cocaine. And then later it became movement into heroin and other things like fentanyl. But what's emerged in Mexico over the past couple of years has been two major groups with international connections, the Sinaloa cartel and a new upstart that's come on the past couple of years, Jalisco Nueva Generación, which have been fighting a proxy war using other splinter groups across just different states in the country for territory. That's involved increasingly a focus on ports, such as, for example, the port of Manzanillo, which is one of the key places that you import the precursor chemicals for the fentanyl that those groups now bring into the United States. But it extends really across the country in places like Guerrero, which has become virtually lawless. There are 1,000 little stories about the battles in individual places. You have the story on the U.S. border, for example, of Tamaulipas, where you have the falling influence of the once dominant Gulf cartel and Jalisco Nueva Generación moving in. You have the battle over places like Manzanillo, et cetera, et cetera. But as you also point out, John, that in addition to the movement of cocaine then replaced by heroin, and now, of course, the rise of the role of fentanyl, another increasingly lucrative business has become essentially the taxing of the movement of migrants through the country, which to some degree in some calculations has become as lucrative, if not more lucrative, than the drug flow. And so, the cartels and the different groups that they ally with have played an increasing role in that trafficking, which has certainly changed the dynamic. And at the same time, these areas which are battlegrounds for the movement of drugs across the border are also some of the areas in which migrants have been accumulating. And so they wait to get into the United States. And so that creates an environment of danger and lawlessness. And so as pointed out, the head of our DEA, and frankly, the DEA was restricted in its access to Mexico once close security cooperation through AMLO's actions and his 2020 security law. DEA Chief Ann Milgram just made some statements about just the extent of the number of people that are employed directly or indirectly by these cartels, putting them as many as 45,000, which puts them on par with the size of the Mexican military, although not capability. AMLO, oftentimes some of these most interesting comments come out in his morning press conferences, his mañaneros. So I think he said something along the lines of, that woman doesn't have the right information. But certainly the issue of how powerful the cartels have become and how much this is a concern, not only in terms of Mexico, but the drug flows that last year resulted in over 100,000 overdoses. This is a major problem for all of us.
And important to mention, the precursors for the fentanyl that flows into the United States and contributes to the chaos that we see called homeless or the unhoused. The precursors are manufactured, I'm told, in China and shipped across the Pacific. Impossible to imagine that the manufacture and the shipment of those precursors is something that the government in Beijing doesn't know about. Impossible to believe. But then again, You need proof. So I move on to another story that's positive, although puzzling, about Mexico. I read the headlines in the Financial Times. This is London. Mexican president's populism looms over scientist protege. Leadership hopeful Claudia Sheinbaum, the mayor of Mexico City, faces questions over whether she can win new voters despite technocratic background. Professor, this is a wow. She's enormously well qualified and has delivered as Mexican mayor. I believe that there's reason to believe AMLO favors her. What are these questions about winning over new voters? Where is that going in this case?
Yeah, absolutely, John. So right now, of course, Mexico is in the primary phase of the lead up to the 2024 election. And the question is which one of the least two, perhaps three major candidates does the dominant Morena party elect? She, as you pointed out, is seen as AMLO's favorite, although the former foreign minister, Marcelo Ebrard, is another one high in the running. And Adán López, the former interior minister, is a distant third within Morena. But certainly, she is a inspiring candidate. She is very intelligent. She's a technocrat. She first came on to work for AMLO back when he was mayor of Mexico City, basically as his city environment minister. So it's interesting that she really doesn't have the charisma of AMLO. The Mexicans have a kind of a colorful word that they call her a fifi, which refers to when you are seen as kind of a liberal elite coming from a elite, well-to-do family. And so the issue is that you see her at rallies, and she often comes up with these very kind of thoughtful, modest, technocratically centered answers, which are really probably good ideas for where you should take Mexico. But it doesn't resonate with the people as much as, for example, the major opponent that you mentioned, Xochitl Galvez, with the PRI PAN PRD coalition, who is again a little bit more mischievous and charismatic and gets involved in protests and things like that. And so we'll see how Sheinbaum plays. But the other thing is interesting that although she is AMLO's favorite, and she is certainly built her case on continuing AMLO's legacy. She refers to strengthening the next phase of Mexico's fourth transformation. And yet the things that she talks about doing, which apparently are of importance and interest to her, such as strengthening the protection of the environment, strengthening the green energy composition of Mexico's energy sector, strengthening the rights of women. These are all things that are very different from the direction in which AMLO has taken the country over his 6 years of government.
And Claudia Sheinbaum and Senator Galvez are now two personalities emerging from this contest. It's a big election. We're going to watch it very carefully over these next months. The election in 2024 in Mexico and the election in the United States in 2024 will determine the direction for North America in the Americas. Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College Strategic Studies Institute. We're headed to the Andean chain. Questions of countries that are vulnerable to manipulation from the outside and gang warfare from the inside. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.